Oh my God, I have so many VHS tapes I gotta get rid of here. What is this? Hold on a second. Hulk Hogan sex tape? What the hell is this doing in here? Let's see what's on here.
But I was hanging and banging, and I just started feeling like I couldn't go on. I wasn't getting tired. If believe it or not, man, I can't believe it. I was just getting lazy, you know? But then my buddy said, "Come on, Hulk, keep it up. You're looking good, man. Just a couple more. Remember, Daddy, you're the champ."
Oh, no.
Well, my muscles started pumping and my heart started pounding.
Oh, God, no.
And I felt stronger and I kept going on and on and on and on. And I just kept going on and on and on. And then finally I was finished.
Oh, I'm going to throw up.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
It is Royal Rumble weekend, which means Royal Rumble predictions. Getting this show up a day early because I just cannot wait any longer. I'll be doing a separate review for NXT TakeOver San Antonio, which is tonight as I record this. I did my predictions for that show last week, if you want to go back in the archives and check that out. This is episode 480 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Saturday, January 28th, 2017. I am the Solid Monster. First, thank you for helping to make the Sound Off one of the top 10 most popular sports and recreation podcasts on all of Podbean for 2016. Judging by the listing on the site, looks like we came in number one, which is very cool, so thank you all for that. We will find out, for those who have asked, we'll find out the results of the Wrestling Radio Awards this Tuesday, the 31st, on WrestlingRadioAwards.com. I believe they will be live streaming the awards that evening, so you might want to check that out. Thank you again to everybody who took time out of their day to vote for the Sound Off for Show of the Year, and for my three interviews with Bob Holly, with Katrina, and with Diamond Dallas Page. We'll find out the results on Tuesday. I want to also just give some love to Audible, those of who have been using our link to sign up for a free trial of the Audible service for 30 days. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the link to use. It is just for you guys. You can use it to sign up, sample the service. You get one free audio book. You get to keep that book no matter what. A lot of you have cashed in for the death of WCW. Some of you have taken my recommendation. You've bought the Daniel Bryan book, which I believe actually might have narration from Bryan himself. Chris Jericho, at least one of his books are up there, and Jericho's books are among my favorites of anybody who's done a wrestling book. Plus Hulk Hogan and Brock Lesnar and Steve Austin, there's a whole bunch of books up there. You get yours for free after you sign up and use our link, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. And you can become a PayPal VIP. If you like what you hear every single week, thesolomonster.com, you'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. It is always there. If you are feeling particularly generous, that is the place to go and show some support for the Sound Off. Of course, $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname here on the show. $30 or more will get you a shout-out and a quick plug for your own podcast, social media page, business, or what have you. We have a bunch of names to get through here. I'm just going to run through them. I want to say thank you very much to Out of Control Cody Thomas, longtime listener, who wants to give a shout-out to his new bride, Charisma. You see, Cody literally has charisma. They just got married on Friday. He says their honeymoon plans include watching the Royal Rumble tomorrow and listening to the Sound Off. See, now you're making me blush. Which is not a good look for me because I have the complexion of Sheamus, so please don't do that. John Loose Cannon Lopez. You didn't think I was going to forget John. Deadpool James Herrera. Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts. Beast Mode Brock Joseph. Luis Hercules Hernandez. Nemesis Nathan Moyers. Masgrave Micah Harshaw. Velvet Revolver Robert Murray. Raymond the Mountie Medina. Jimmy the Mailman Milstead. Brandon For Whom the Bell Tolls Segovia, the Prairie State Pariah, Kenneth Johnson, Trevor Mountain Man Mays, First Class LT Gilberry, the Montreal Mauler, Patrick Pacheco, Super Supreme Gus Gomez, Josh Bad Medicine Medina, the Griller, Ray Gritt, the Inglewood Warlock, Sean Rhea, Will Wildman Waters II, the Baton Rouge Bully, Darius Moore, the Westlake Wildman, St. Clara Isuka, who does highlight videos and skits on his own YouTube channel by the same name. If you want to check him out, you can do so at St. Clara Isuka. That's St. Clara is all one word. Clara is C-L-A-I-R. And Isuka is I-S-U-K-A. Check out his content. And last but not least here, the Marathon Man, Danny Hill, who is running in the Brighton Marathon April 9th and raising funds for a nonprofit called Ariana's Hope. It was started by his sister-in-law and her husband after they lost their daughter right after she was born. He's trying to raise £1,000. And right now he's sitting at about, I think, just shy of 20% of his goal right now. He needs some help. You can go to justgiving.com and in the search bar type in Danny Hill. And it'll be the first campaign that comes up for Ariana's Hope. So thank you to everybody who made a donation this week. I very much appreciate it. Shout out to Rock Bottom Phone Cases and Accessories. We had some people use our code last week after I promoted it here on the show. They sell high-quality phone cases at rock-bottom prices, and for a limited time, you can get 10% off your purchase of $9.99 or more when you use the coupon code SOLOMONSTER at checkout. So just go to rockbottomcases.com. As always, you get free shipping on everything. You pay no sales tax. You're already getting bargain prices, and you can use our code and get a few more bucks off. So rockbottomcases.com. Never overpay for phone accessories. Again. I always love it when Jericho says it that way. So, I was just looking for a reason to say it myself. Anyway, with Rumble Sunday now just about upon us, I am happy to announce that we have shattered 2,000 participants in our Royal Rumble pool in our Facebook group. We are now up to nearly 2,300 participants. If you're listening to this early, you may still have a few hours left. If you're listening to this on Saturday, you definitely have some time left to get in on the fun. All you got to do is find Zach Holker's original post in the group. Let him know. You might want to post a comment in there. Some people that have liked the post, I know, have been complaining that they were not listed when Zach issued the numbers. So you still have to like the post, but it might be worthwhile to also post a comment, tag Zach, let him know if there's any issues. He's the one kind of overseeing that part of it, not me. We are now up to about 75 pools or so. It is insane. And the amount of work that went into putting all of this together, all the credit goes to Zach for that. He is a beast. If you see the post he made with everyone's numbers in it, you'll see what I mean. I mean, there's a whole listing of all the numbers for all, whatever, 75 or so pools. The only way to even find your name on that list is to do the old Control F on your keyboard and search for it that way. I drew number 23 in pool number 3. Only one man in history has ever won the Royal Rumble, entering at number 23. And he co-won that year's Rumble. That was Lex Luger back in 94. So hopefully I have better luck than Lex Luger did at WrestleMania that year. So I will be putting, or pulling in, I should say, for number 23 tomorrow night. By the way, if I do happen to win, that does not mean I get to buy myself a shirt from my own store or I give myself a shout out on the podcast. Any of the prizes and stuff I'm going to talk about here in a second, they don't go to me. If I pull my name, or if, you know, I guess Zach will be the one pulling the names in the initial pools and I'll then be handling the final pool. I may end up in the final pool, but I will not be the ultimate winner. Obviously, I'm excluded from being the final winner. And if I do happen to pick my name, I'll just dip back into the pool and we'll find someone else. Whoever has the winning number in each pool, there's going to be about 75 or so of you guys. All of those names are then going to be entered into the final ultimate pool next week, and the winner will be chosen from there. I am not shouting out 75 names here on this podcast, although I know sometimes with the PayPal shoutouts, it kind of feels like 75, but believe me, it's not. So we're just talking top winners here. Those are the people who are going to be shouted out next week. And as such, because we have so many names and because we have the best fans in the world who listen to this show, who have stepped up to offer prizes for their own. I mean, these are prizes that they've come to me and said, hey, Solomonster, we want to sweeten the pot a little bit here. I'm willing to, you know, donate this or buy this and mail it to the winner. So we've had a lot of people step up to the plate. And because of that, I have changed the prize structure to accommodate not one, but multiple winners in this pool, in this contest. So here's how it's going to work. This is what I have settled on. The first place winner, the last man standing in the Rumble, if you will, gets $100 sent to them via PayPal by Alvin Siegerts, longtime listener of the show. Shout out to Alvin. All the winner has to do is give Alvin their PayPal address, if you've got like a PayPal email or something, and he will PayPal you 100 American dollars. So then it would be whatever the equivalent is to 100 bucks if you live outside the U.S., which, looking at the listener base of this show, there are quite a few people, and I think judging on last week, quite a few Canadians, let alone folks from the U.K., who listen to this show. So it would be whatever the conversion would be in your own currency is what it would end up being. But he's putting up 100 bucks. That's a big deal. In addition, that person, the ultimate winner, first place, will receive a free Sound Off shirt of their choice from me, from our Pro Wrestling Tee store. You just have to let me know what shirt you want and what size and where I'm sending it to. And a shout out here on the podcast. So that's what the first place winner gets. The second place winner, the runner up in the Rumble, will receive a complimentary Wrestle Crate from Julian Cannon. Julian is going to buy the crate if he hasn't already done so, and he will be the one to mail it to you. It's important to note that when it comes to these prizes, aside from the shirt and the shout-outs, you know, these folks that are stepping up to the plate here, they're the ones you're going to be dealing with, not me. They're the ones who are responsible for making sure everybody gets what they're supposed to be getting. And so the second place winner will get a Wrestle Crate mailed to them by Julian, plus they will also get a shout-out here on the podcast. And the third place winner will receive a shirt or a hoodie from Matt Harrigan of the Superkick Foundation, as well as a complimentary phone case of their choosing from our friends over at rockbottomcases.com, and a shout-out on the podcast. That's a lot of cool stuff, I gotta say. That's a lot of cool stuff right there. Like I said, I'll take care of the Sound Off shirt and all the shout-outs. You'll have to work with those guys to make sure you get whatever you need and get them your mailing address. You got to make sure you're comfortable with that. But these guys are all on the up and up. I can tell you that. So those first, second, and third place winners in the final pool are going to be chosen by me live here on the podcast next Sunday. So we will not know the final ultimate winner for another week. Zach will post the names of the 75 plus people in the Facebook group who win each pool. That will go up, I mean, within a day or two, probably this week of the Rumble. But the top three winners, I'm picking them myself using the randomizer that I've used in the past for the PayPal Rumble contest that we've done. It's totally random. We'll do that next weekend on episode 481. So to the victors go the spoils, as they say. With that out of the way, let's get right into it. Tomorrow night is the 30th annual Royal Rumble, back at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio for the first time in 20 years. I can remember it like it was yesterday. Mil Máscaras eliminating himself from the Royal Rumble because, God forbid, he should let somebody else eliminate him. They're expecting around 40,000 or so people for the show. They had 60,000 for the show 20 years ago. But that was with a shitload of comp tickets. I mean, they gave out like over 10,000 or I don't know, 10 or 12,000 freebies just to get people in the building that year. The actual number, I think the actual paid attendance, and I know Jim Cornette's talked about this before, somewhere between like 45 and 50,000 that they had back in 97. You know, business wasn't exactly booming for WWE back at the beginning of 1997. In fact, Vince has talked about how at one point, I think, either in late 96 or early 97, they almost went belly up. So business was not really all that strong. If they end up with a higher paid attendance for that show than this one, that's really sad. I mean, you could talk about, well, prices now are going to be a lot more than they were back then, and that's true, but they really should easily be able to get more people paid into this building for this year's Rumble than they did back in 97. Don't forget, it's a four-hour show. Tomorrow night, 6 hours, if you count the two-hour pre-show, which starts at 5 o'clock. So get ready for a lot of Rumble. Royal Rumble, by the way, it was revealed this week, coming back to Philadelphia next year. The last time the Rumble was held in Philly was 2015. One of the worst Royal Rumble matches of all time. That was the one where Kane and Big Show started dumping people out in the end. I mean, I could go in, I'm not going to go on a whole rant about this other than it still blows my mind what they did in that Rumble, even if he wasn't going to win. What they did, how they used Daniel Bryan in that Rumble was just as popular and over as he still was. And seeing what happened the year before when they didn't even put him in the Rumble, for them to be that tone deaf and handle things that way is just inexcusable. They took that entire Rumble match, by the way, and they put it up on their YouTube channel for free. Of all the Rumbles to put up, they put that one up. And I don't know if they lowered the volume at the very end on the boos. The boos were definitely still there. And the Bryan thing was just the dumbest fucking thing I've ever seen. But when Kane and Big Show, and I know what they were trying to do, you know, Roman Reigns overcomes the two giants, as though nobody else has ever beaten Kane and Big Show. But the Bryan thing was bad enough. Once people realize, all right, Bryan's gone, we have to accept this, and it looks like Roman's going to win, but we've got Dolph Ziggler, who people loved at the time, and we've got Dean Ambrose, who the people were getting behind in that match. And it was almost like this was WWE trolling all of us. Because one by one by one in those last few minutes of the Rumble, Kane and Big Show, and I'm not even exaggerating, were literally picking these guys up like sacks of trash and just gently dumping them out of the ring. And you can feel the fan's soul, collective soul being crushed each time they, like a giant fuck you to everybody sitting in the crowd. I felt bad for Roman getting that reaction, but I was happy that the fans shat on that match at the very end there the way they did, because it's the only way to send a message, you know, to WWE when they do stuff like that. But they put that up on their YouTube channel, and I went back and I watched parts of it, and it is every bit as infuriating to go back and watch today as it was 2 years ago. So, yeah, they're coming back. They're coming back to Philly next year. Hopefully they'll have better luck with the crowd. And, you know, look, you know you did something wrong. You know something's wrong when you send The Rock out there, and even The Rock gets booed, okay? And I know they were booing Roman more than him. But The Rock had that classic look on his face, like, huh, what's going on here? He was, I don't think he was expecting that type of reaction. But since Philly is getting the Rumble next year, that would kill the possibility of them getting WrestleMania. I know Philly and Minneapolis have been rumored WrestleMania locations the past couple of years. So they're not getting it next year either, I guess. Actually, the Rumble's close enough to me. We might actually go to the Rumble next year. So let's get into the card for this year. Pre-show has Sasha Banks against Nia Jax. Sasha got some revenge on Nia last Monday on Raw, whacked her with a crutch a few times. I've got Sasha winning here. It could go either way. I think Nia is still undefeated. She's not. Bayley pinned her a few weeks ago. Yeah, so she's not even unbeaten anymore. I think Sasha, look, you know, when they took Sasha out of the championship picture, you knew it was going to cool her down a little bit. But she's really cooled down a lot. And I still think she's one of the more popular, you know, female performers on the show. You've got to start heating her up, I think, going into WrestleMania. I would imagine they'll have something relatively big planned for her at Mania. They should. So I think that she gets the win here over Nia Jax. Also, Cesaro and Sheamus defend their tag team titles against Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson with not one, but two referees. After Gallows and Anderson got screwed over on Raw 2 weeks ago, I've just seen these two guys lose so many times by now that I've just lost all hope for them. I'm going with Sheamus and Cesaro to retain. They are my pick. And, you know, it's funny. On Raw last Monday, Gallows got a singles win over Cesaro. Not as shocking as the singles win that Anderson got a few weeks ago. That was shocking. But still kind of a surprise. And on commentary, Michael Cole made it a point to mention that Luke Gallows was a three-time IWGP Tag Team Champion with Carl Anderson in New Japan. Which is not the first time they've mentioned it. They've mentioned the IWGP Tag Belts. They've mentioned New Japan before. But I bring it up because it was only a couple of weeks ago on Raw that Carl Anderson was on commentary. And he kept mentioning over and over and over again how they were champions in Japan. We deserve more respect, Michael. We were the tag team champions in Japan. Clearly they told him, look, just mention the Japan thing like over and over and over again. And Michael Cole then, that was kind of his cue, to turn around and say, look, that was Japan. This is WWE. kind of as if to say, none of that matters now that you're here. Now you're in the big leagues, pal. So now whenever I hear Michael Cole mention, well, these guys had great success in New Japan, I think to myself, who cares? Who cares? You've already made it very clear that it means absolutely nothing. So why is that supposed to impress us? Why even mention that ever again? They don't think these things through, I think, sometimes before they do it. If you want it to mean something and be like, wow, these guys were tag team champions overseas and in this other company, then you should treat it as such. You shouldn't have Michael Cole out there going, oh, with all due respect, that was there and this is here and you were a, you know, big fish in a small pond or however it was that he phrased it. It's like, now they mention it, it's like, eh, okay, who cares? What does it really mean? Rounding out the pre-show, they just bumped the SmackDown Women's six-woman tag team match to the pre-show. It's Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, and Natalya taking on Nikki Bella, Becky Lynch, and Naomi, who is back from her ankle injury. This is Mickie's first match back, I believe, on the main roster. I don't see her losing here. I'm going with Alexa, Mickie, and Natalya for the win. So now we get into the actual pay-per-view. Rich Swann and Neville for the Cruiserweight Championship. Neville has been amazing in this new heel role of his. I have not been watching as much 205 Live as I was at the beginning. I've kind of fallen off it a little bit, but I am paying attention to Neville's stuff. I saw, you know, the match with Cedric Alexander and his promos, and just, this guy is just nailing it. He is firing on all cylinders right now. It's just great to see him back on TV for all the months that I joked about. God, you gotta put this guy's fucking face on the side of a milk carton. At least he's back on TV. He's in a meaningful role. He's excelling. And I would be stunned if he did not walk away with the championship here. You know, all due respect to Rich Swann, but Neville, should have had that belt, weeks ago. And so I think you put the title on him here and you promote him for a big cruiserweight title match at WrestleMania. I don't know that they will go with my idea of trying to convince Kota Ibushi to come in for a one shot. And I get it, you know, if they don't want him to be on the WrestleMania card if he's not, you know, full time on their roster under contract. But I think in terms of looking at the biggest cruiserweight match they could do, and all the guys they've brought in for the cruiserweight stuff going back to the tournament, Kota Ibushi was the star of that tournament. And he's come in for a couple of appearances here and there since then. Not on the main roster, but he's been around. And if I'm looking at the card for WrestleMania, and instead of just putting everybody in one giant multi-man match, which is my fear as far as what they might do, if I'm looking at what's the best one-on-one singles match for that cruiserweight title they could possibly do, it's Neville and Kota Ibushi. So, probably a pipe dream, probably not going to happen. But either way, Neville should walk out with that belt. I think he will. Charlotte defends her Raw Women's Championship against Bayley. I think it's too soon for Bayley to win. I know they haven't exactly treated the Bayley character exactly the way they did in NXT, where she lost a lot and she was the ultimate underdog and then finally started winning so that when she beat Sasha in Brooklyn, it was this big celebration. She has not been booked that way on the main roster. You know, I think she wins more often than she loses. And I guess you could still kind of, you know, book her as the underdog if you want to. Her and Charlotte are polar opposites in many ways. They talked about that. They did promos on Raw last week. You know, Charlotte was born with a silver spoon in her mouth and her father was a big star and her father got her into WWE and Bayley didn't have that. She was the ultimate nerdy, geeky super fan, and you got pictures of her meeting Bret Hart when she was a kid and all these different people. And yeah, I like that dynamic, although I will say, you know, the last few weeks, this feud is just not doing anything for me. You know, people talk a lot about how SmackDown is a better show than Raw, but you gotta give the women's division stuff to Raw. No, I don't actually. I actually happen to enjoy the women's stuff on SmackDown a lot more lately than I do on Raw. On Raw, you've got Charlotte and Bayley, which has been, to me, it's been kind of cold. And you've got Sasha and Nia, which has been eh. And that's it. What else do you have with the women? What else is going on? We're still waiting for Emelina to debut. I'll probably pop out six kids and have a big bushy beard by the time that happens. I don't really see what is the real appeal at the moment of the Raw Women's Division over the SmackDown Women's Division. If I had to pick one over the other, it's SmackDown. SmackDown is crushing Raw in all of those ways. So this feud, just not a lot of gasoline on the fire to me. And again, I just think it's too soon for Bayley. You want to save it either for Mania, and maybe not even Mania. Maybe you want to go, you know, another 6 months and do it at SummerSlam in Brooklyn before she finally wins the big one. I'd be fine with that. I think that might actually be a better idea. And you build and build and build and build to it. Plus, you know, Bayley's already gotten, what, 2 wins, 3 wins over Charlotte. Charlotte has that pay-per-view undefeated streak. I don't see them breaking it here. So I think Charlotte wins. I really don't see any way that she loses this. Unless she loses the match by DQ, but no way does she lose the belt. Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns in a no disqualification match for the Universal title, with Chris Jericho hanging above the ring in a shark cage. You know my thoughts on this feud. Very talented men involved here, and I have enjoyed the back and forth, the banter between Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho for many months now, the best friends, who I'm sure are on a collision course against one another at WrestleMania. But the Owens, Reigns, Jericho, merry-go-round has to come to a halt tomorrow night. This has to be it. And it may not be, because even if Roman wins the championship, which I think he will, Roman Reigns is my pick to become the new champion. Even if that happens, well, Kevin Owens deserves a rematch, right? Kevin Owens gets his rematch. Now, do they do it on Raw? Do they do it at the next Raw brand pay-per-view? I don't know. But this is probably not the end of this feud. We're nearing the end, but I still don't think we're quite there yet. And I am just sick to death of it. I have seen enough. It is time to move on. I do think they'll go out there and they'll probably have a great match. And Jericho, there'll be some antics and he'll try to... Here's how I see this going down. Because it's very apparent to me, whether they do the title change here or a different night, that Kevin Owens is not going into WrestleMania with that Universal title. And it will be Kevin Owens and Chris Jericho in a match of some kind at Mania. This is where it would seem to make the most sense to have Jericho, you know, interfere in some way, even though he's locked in a cage, do something that, kind of like sorry, not sorry, costs Kevin Owens the championship. And that's the real impetus for starting the real breakup. Not the next swerve where you think they're breaking up. Like the real legit breakup between these two guys. It's got to be on this show. And I think Roman walks out with the championship. And part of the reason I think Roman walks out with the championship is because John Cena challenges AJ Styles for the WWE Championship. And I do not believe that we are going to get a title change with the SmackDown belt on this show. I think the Raw belt changes. I think the SmackDown belt is staying with AJ Styles, or at least I sure hope so. This is, to me, a much bigger match, even though, again, now, some people might say, well, Salamaster, if you're so tired of seeing Kevin Owens and Roman Reigns, well, then how can you be so excited to see John Cena and AJ Styles? We've already seen them a whole bunch of times. Yeah, but not every week. I mean, I think there's a definite difference between the two, where they've spaced out their matches. Their matches have all been, like, big time. The match at SummerSlam was, you know, a big match. It was a great match, and AJ getting the clean win over Cena, it's not something you see very often. And I don't know, and then they had the triple threat, I think it was at No Mercy it might have been. But it's not like we're seeing AJ and Cena on TV every week, right? We're not seeing different combinations of Cena versus Styles for free on SmackDown every week. Big difference between those two main feuds. I think they've spaced this out very nicely. We have AJ Styles saying, look, John Cena, you can't beat me, right? You can see me, you can't beat me. I've beaten you 3 different times now, including right in the middle of that ring, clean. I'm the one guy that you can't beat. And I like that story. And I figured, well, I didn't think they were going to do this match at the Rumble. I thought that all roads led to WrestleMania. All roads led to John Cena and AJ Styles finally having that next big rematch at WrestleMania. And that is where they would do the title change and Cena would tie Ric Flair. Because you always knew that in the end, that was going to be the ultimate result, right? It just seemed to make sense to me that AJ wins, AJ wins, AJ wins. And that's great. I'm glad they did that. But you knew that in the end, Cena had to get his win back. And what better time to do it, given the whole number 16, than at WrestleMania? So then they announced the match for the Rumble. And I thought, all right, well, you know, he could still win the title in the Alamo Dome. Big crowd, 40, 50,000 people. And this was back when I thought we were going to get Cena Undertaker maybe for the championship, which apparently is not going to happen. So I look at this and I watched the last few weeks of SmackDown. And there's been a lot of debate about that promo from the last episode of SmackDown. A lot of people very upset that John Cena buried AJ Styles. Man, he made that guy look like a complete goofball. And other people, you know, have disagreed and said, yeah, those people just don't get it. They think everything is a burial. They don't get it. This was great storytelling. I happen to fall into the latter camp. I enjoyed this promo. I did not view it. I didn't really view it as a burial the way other people did. I thought it was heated. I thought it made the feud feel more real. And I'm always a big fan of injecting more realism into things. Cena made some very pointed comments about Styles here. And the reason I think that it irritated a lot of people is because there was a lot of truth in what he was saying. He said that AJ's been hot for 6 months, but I've been running this place for over a decade. Well, that's true. He has been running this place for over a decade. And AJ had a hell of a year, but he's only been champion for a few months. He's been doing a great job, I think. But, you know, the length of time that he's been on top as champion is nothing compared to what John Cena has done. That's true. He said that, you know, Styles might call John a sorry excuse for a wrestler because, you know, I didn't spend time on the indies. I wasn't built for the indies. I was built for WWE. And you knew that kind of comment would just get under the skin of all the people that hate this guy's guts. I actually thought it was very well done in that way. They knew exactly what they were doing. He also made the comment that AJ, he wasn't a level below me. You're a level even below that. And he called AJ just a guy holding on to the championship because I let you. Almost coming off as a bit of a dick, but, you know, Cena can do that. And there are some people who behind the scenes would say that Cena is a bit of a dick. I think you know who those people are. They showed footage from the Today Show last week when Cena co-hosted the 9 a.m. hour. And he was co-hosting with Al Roker and Tamron Hall. And they were talking about the Rumble, previewing, you know, you're going to be fighting for the championship. And then they were like pretending that they didn't know the other person's name. I don't buy any of this, by the way. I'm sure this was all set up this way. Because if it wasn't, it's kind of disrespectful. And you know, WWF or WWE and NBC, you know, they're working together. There ain't no way they went in there not knowing who his opponent's name is. So I think this was very strategic. It's all part of the story. And they were like, you know, just pretend like you don't know who the guy's name is. So they're like, yeah, you're facing that guy from Georgia. Whoever that guy from Georgia, that guy from Atlanta. That's what they said. The guy from Atlanta, even though he's from Gainesville. And just completely respecting AJ Styles, completely just making him look like a complete jabron. That's what it was designed to do. The reason that it didn't bother me is because I don't think that Cena is winning the championship. I'm okay with all of this, provided that AJ Styles walks out with the title tomorrow night. Which is a big if, because it may not work out that way. The Today Show stuff, though, I mean, I would love to see AJ win. And I'm predicting AJ to win. He is my pick to retain the title. I would love to see AJ win and then go on the Today Show and give Al Roker a Styles clash. But I read on Friday that 9 a.m. hour of the Today Show that Cena co-hosted, that Al Roker and Tamron Hall are the hosts for, it's going away. Tamron Hall and Al Roker are about to be booted from the 9 a.m. hour. The rumor is that Megyn Kelly, who they just signed away from Fox News, is going to be taking over that hour. She just signed with NBC. So if I'm AJ Styles, or if I'm the writers, I'm sending him on TV this week after he wins, hopefully, to go on television and mock them for losing their jobs. I'm sure they're still with the Today Show. They're just not in the 9 a.m. hour anymore. But Styles should have carte blanche to go on TV this week and mock them for it. But as like I was saying before, I don't have a problem with the promo and the last few weeks of promos, because Cena's made a lot of comments like this. If you've seen Cena on Talking Smack, it's been more of the same. Very pointed, very biting comments. And I'm okay with it, provided Styles wins. Because for John Cena to talk all of this shit about AJ and put him down and demean everything that he's accomplished up until this point, inside and outside WWE, if in the end John Cena just beats him, then I would agree that something's wrong there. Then, you know, that does not sit well with me. But if in the end Styles, even if he has to cheat, if he finds a way to win, and John Cena does not win number 16 tomorrow night, then I'm okay with it. because at some point Styles has to get some of that, you know, some of that shine back. And I think by winning, he would do that. I didn't have an issue with the promo except for one thing I just want to mention before we move on here. There was one thing, and that is having AJ just stand there and allowing Cena to rip on him the way he did without any real comeback. I mean, this is like your standard WWE promo formula when they do these face-to-face things in the ring. You know, on Talking Smack after the show, Styles was on with Shane McMahon, and he was pissed. He was pissed off. He was upset. He went off on the lack of respect that he gets. I thought it was a good promo. But the problem is, it's the kind of promo that he should have cut while he was out there in the ring. He's the champ, right? He's got the belt over his shoulder. He's the number one guy on SmackDown. So when John Cena is talking all this crap about him on the actual TV show that has 2.5 million people watching, he shouldn't be standing there like an idiot for 5 or 10 straight minutes with his mouth shut, just letting Cena spout off at the mouth like that. He's got to stop him. He's got to interrupt him. I mean, why would he let John Cena go on uninterrupted like that and say those things? See, that part didn't make any sense to me. And if I had one criticism of this segment, that would be it. That was pretty dumb. Because Cena was saying some pretty horrible shit. And if I'm AJ, first of all, if I'm AJ Styles, I'd pop him in the mouth. I don't even say anything. I just punch him in the fucking face. But at least rebut him and go back and forth and you know, let Cena get his points in. It is TV, right? You can't just talk over each other. But for him to just stand there like a goober like that I didn't agree with. Then we have the 30-man Royal Rumble match, with the winner going to WrestleMania to challenge for the championship of their choosing, or for their brand, I guess it would be. Lots of big names in the Rumble this year. In fact, this is the most star-studded Rumble match in many years. I have to say, you know, I'm genuinely excited for the Royal Rumble match this year. And it really is not easy to pick a winner in this year's match, at least not as easy as it's been in the past, which I think is great. I like it when it's more unpredictable like that, when you've got 2, 3, 4, 5 different potential options of who could walk out as the winner instead of just one or maybe two. We've got Goldberg, we've got Brock Lesnar, we've got The Undertaker, Braun Strowman is in the Rumble, The Big Show, Dean Ambrose, Chris Jericho, Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, Sami Zayn, who had to earn his way into the Rumble match, and who I think will enter at number one. If I had to make a pick on who opens the Rumble, I think it's Sami Zayn at number one. I could see him and Braun Strowman opening the match. Seth Rollins is out of the Rumble match after his loss to Sami Zayn on Raw, which makes me think that Triple H ends up being one of the surprise entrants into the Rumble. Seth can interfere to eliminate him. That would at least give Triple H a reason to want to wrestle Seth, because you know that's got to be the WrestleMania match. And what incentive does Triple H have to accept, you know, the challenge from Seth Rollins? Rollins has to get one over on him at some point, and I think this is the perfect way to do it. Got to put some heat on their feud, which to me is just ice cold. They put this thing on ice for months. Now they're trying to heat it up. Well, you got to do something big to heat this thing back up. You can have Rollins show up to the Alamo Dome and Stephanie tell security, nope, keep this guy out. I don't want him in the building. He's barred from the building. And Triple H later on, he enters the Rumble. Last year's winner, it makes sense for him to come back and try to do it again. Seth comes out from the crowd and tosses him out and then hightails it right out of the building. It's the right thing to do. I think it makes sense. For what it's worth, just talking about some other names here that have been rumored. You know, Kurt Angle was pulled by WWE from his announced gig this weekend for Five Star Wrestling, which debuts tonight. Actually, it might be on right now with the time zone difference. There's a 2-hour special that promotion is airing on Spike UK. He was supposed to be a commentator for it. Now, that does not mean that Kurt Angle is going to be in the Royal Rumble. In fact, Kurt flat out told TMZ, I will not be in the Royal Rumble. So naturally, I went into the Facebook group and the first post were, so there's a chance? Like, as wrestling fans, we've all been conditioned to not believe anything, right? It's kind of like with politicians, you know? They say one thing, you automatically assume it means something else. So Kurt can go out there, and Kenny Omega, who I'm going to talk about in a second, can go out there and say, I will not be in the Royal Rumble. All that does with a lot of people is make them think even more that they're going to be in the Rumble. But I'm pretty confident Kurt is shooting straight on this one. I don't think he'll be in the Rumble. But I, you know, man, I would love to hear that theme music hit and just see people lose their minds. That would be just awesome. In terms of NXT, I expect Samoa Joe to be in there. I would think Ty Dillinger coming out in the 10 spot just has to be a given. He had people chanting it at him on NXT television a few weeks ago. I think if it's anybody but him, whoever that person is, maybe if it's The Miz or a heel, then they can use that to their advantage. But I think whoever it is going to get booed if it's not Ty Dillinger. And actually, Dillinger and The Miz had a little Twitter war going not too long ago, so maybe they can build something through doing that. So, Triple H, Kurt Angle, Joe, and Dillinger. I've mentioned all of their names so far. Triple H I expect in the Rumble. Angle I don't. Joe I do. Dillinger I do. There's, I believe, I want to say there's 7 or 8 empty spots still open for the Rumble match. You figure James Ellsworth is probably going to be in there. They'll probably stay. Maybe he'll take that spot of the quickest elimination this year or something. They flew in a bunch of guys this weekend for the UK tournament, including their UK champion, Tyler Bate. I believe Wolfgang. I got an email from someone mentioning this to me about a week ago before the news even broke on all the other sites that I think Wolfgang was one of the guys being flown in. And, you know, I think Pete Dunne might be another one. So a bunch of those guys are probably already in town for the shows. I'm recording this as I speak before the NXT TakeOver show, so it's possible they just make an on-camera appearance on the NXT show and not at the Rumble. I don't know. Wouldn't be shocking to see Tyler Bate, being that he won the whole tournament, give him a spot in the Rumble. I don't know that I would do that, because I think you put him in the ring at the same time with guys like Undertaker, Strowman, and Big Show, and boy, does that make your new UK champion look bad. He's a small guy. He's a small dude. I don't know that that does him any favors to be in the ring surrounded by guys like that. So if he is in, hopefully he's out by the time the Giants start dumping people out. I mentioned Kenny Omega's name. Kenny Omega was in the news this week because he made an announcement about his future. He said that he will not be appearing in the Royal Rumble. And again, I take him at his word. The way he explained it was, I don't want people to be disappointed expecting me to be there and then I'm not. And so they shit on the Rumble match and... You know, he was trying to be respectful of it all and saying, look, people should watch the Rumble and enjoy it. It's one of the most exciting events all year long. I don't want people to go into it thinking and expecting that I'm going to be there. He says he won't be. And he made the announcement on Thursday on Wrestling Observer Radio that he is going to Japan next month, face-to-face, to negotiate a new deal with New Japan for at least 1 year. It sounds like he would like to just sign a 1 year contract, but he said at least 1 year he's looking to strike a new deal with them. I don't think this is a swerve. I know a lot of people still do. I don't think it is. I thought all along, and I said as much here on the podcast, I thought all along he's staying with New Japan. He has unfinished business in New Japan. It's too soon to bail on those guys. New Japan has treated him well. New Japan has given him the platform to become one of the biggest names in the wrestling business. And I believe that he will be the IWGP champion within the next 6 months. And believe me, in a year, if he signs a one-year deal, all of these rumors are going to start up all over again. Oh, he's going to be at the Rumble, or oh, he's going to be at WrestleMania. We're going to go through this all over again. It's not like, oh, he should have struck while the iron is hot. There is an argument, I guess, you can make. His stock may never be higher than it is now, right? Or he wrestled a 6-star match at the show. You can make that argument that maybe he won't ever reach this exact level of popularity again. I think he will. I think he's only scratching the surface of what he's going to be able to do in his career. And I do think eventually all roads lead to WWE and he'll end up being a reasonably big star. Why does he have to do it now? What is this rush? I mean, he made the point even in the interview when he made the announcement. He said, you know, not for nothing, WWE, they don't need talent right now. Now, WWE might disagree. I think Triple H even made a comment on his NXT conference call the other day that he's actually disappointed. He is not happy with the state of NXT right now. And I've said as much before, I'm still a very big fan of NXT and the way they book things, and it's just simpler, and it's usually very enjoyable to follow, but it's just kind of dead. There's no buzz right now. They're in this dead period, and it's a combination of guys getting called up and guys getting hurt. Although I know Itami, I think, is going to be back soon. But it's just all these things sort of happened at once. And there isn't that buzz for NXT now that there was 6 or 12 months ago. And Triple H is not happy. And he publicly said as much, which is kind of surprising and kind of refreshing that he would actually come right out and say that. So yeah, I'm sure they would love to use someone like Kenny Omega there and build around him. I suspect they'll probably end up doing that with Chris Hero, who just came back. But he's not going to be at the Rumble. He is looking to sign a new deal. Part of it also is, you know, he said his buddies are in New Japan. The Young Bucks, they recently re-signed with Ring of Honor in New Japan. And he loves to be with those guys. And that might sway him in staying with New Japan. You know, he's there with his friends and they're doing the whole, you know, the Elite thing, the Bullet Club thing. And look, I don't remember if the Bucks signed a 1-year deal or a 2-year. I think it might have been a 2-year deal. But Omega has more to accomplish where he is. There is no rush to come to WWE. And I think he's making the right move. And I think at some point when he is ready to come over, maybe they can come over in a package deal. It could be him and the Young Bucks and they can make an impact, you know, make a big splash. But I don't see this as a situation where, oh man, he blew it. He's making the wrong move. I think he's making exactly the right move if he does stay with New Japan. I mean, he hasn't signed anything yet. He has to first go and negotiate, and who the hell knows, right? Negotiations can fall apart. But I suspect he's staying, and I think it's the right move to make. One of our listeners, Daryl, wrote in asking if, in terms of possible surprises for the Rumble, asking if perhaps we might see Shaquille O'Neal as a surprise entrant in the Rumble. And you know, I had not thought of that, him being in the Rumble to kick off his program with the Big Show, since they're going to have a match at WrestleMania. They are in Orlando. The Rumble is in Orlando. But to me, you know, we've been there, done that already. In fact, it's been less than a year. Shaq was a surprise in the Andre Memorial Battle Royal last year at WrestleMania. He went face-to-face with the Big Show. So, do you do the exact same thing again? I guess you could, but it's like deja vu. They've already done that. So that's kind of what makes me think, I don't know that we're going to see that necessarily, but all the pieces are there. They're in Orlando, which I think Shaq still lives there. And obviously he's got the connection, having played in the city before. And they are seemingly moving ahead with something in Mania. So if they want to get that spark, they want to do something to set things up, I guess that would be as good a time as any to do it. So now the all-important question. Who do I think is going to win the Royal Rumble? Over the last few months, I've pitched ideas for Sami Zayn and for The Undertaker. They were just ideas. This is how I would do it. I like the idea of Sami winning, right? That was my mindset a few months ago when I did that. Obviously, things have changed. I thought that they were going to drag that feud out with Strowman a little bit longer, and then Sami would kind of come back and be the underdog, and they really moved on from that, you know, fairly quickly, and things changed. And look, Sami Zayn may well still win the Royal Rumble. I don't think he is. But things changed, and so I kind of moved on in my thinking. And then I had pitched the idea for The Undertaker. Now that the Rumble is here, right, and it sure doesn't look like Zayn is challenging for any belts at WrestleMania, and the rumor mill says Undertaker isn't challenging for one either. This might be a little bit of a spoiler, hopefully not. If you don't want to hear anything about any rumors about who might win the Royal Rumble, then you might want to skip this part, I'm sorry. But I have seen the rumor about Randy Orton winning the Royal Rumble, and Bray Wyatt winning the championship at Elimination Chamber, and doing Orton against Bray for the title at Mania. Because to me, it was always going to be Orton and Bray. I hadn't thought about that being for the championship, though. Is it possible? I guess it's possible. If it's being reported, it must be coming from somewhere. I don't know how reliable it is. Plans change all the time. I would not put any money on Randy Orton winning the Royal Rumble. I wouldn't put money on wrestling, period. I think it's dumb. But I wouldn't, you know, bet the farm on it. It would be a nice payoff. I've enjoyed the Randy Orton Wyatt storyline. And I think as a payoff, if in the end, you know, you put a championship on the line, I don't think it needs the title. But yeah, I guess it would make it that much sweeter. They've been playing this stuff out for months now. And also, it would be nice, wouldn't it, to see Bray Wyatt with that WWE title, if only for a month. Because I would suspect that Orton would win in the end. and, you know, why it may well end up being something of a transitional champion. I don't think I would mind if it worked out that way. That really is not the idea that I would go with. I wouldn't hate it, but the thing is, like, what do you do then with AJ Styles? If you're taking Cena and Styles out of the title picture for WrestleMania, and you assume we're not going to get another Cena-Styles match if the belt isn't on the line, then what do you do? I mean, there's been rumors of AJ wrestling Shane McMahon or something. They were really playing up the friction between him and Shane on Talking Smack this week. But through all of this, I'm sticking with my pick. My prediction to win the Royal Rumble? Samoa Joe. I said this on another podcast that I did on Thursday, which I believe is now up. I believe that Samoa Joe will win the 2017 Royal Rumble. And I believe that he will go on to challenge Roman Reigns for the Universal Championship at WrestleMania. Although I did joke with somebody on Twitter on Monday. If anybody was paying attention to my Twitter replies, I was only half joking. I kind of dropped my prediction for the Rumble on Monday because somebody asked me, like, who do you think is going to win the Royal Rumble? And I said Samoa Joe. And nobody picked up on it. But I joked with somebody on Twitter. I said, yeah, Samoa Joe. But then he calls out Regal and he screams, give me my title. I want Nakamura. Which it seemed like he was doing on NXT television for about 2 months straight. I like the idea even better. When I fleshed this idea out, and I had a whole conversation actually with Webmaster Mike from SE Scoops the other night, and I was fleshing the idea out to him, and he loved it, which is that you can build Joe up as a free agent. Although, if it's supposed to be 15 Raw guys and 15 SmackDown guys, you'd have to come up with some way to explain how somebody undrafted could take up a spot, you know, in the Rumble. But he could be a free agent. His NXT contract, let's say, has expired, however you want to explain it. And what you could do is he could appear on Raw and SmackDown for like a month or so before he finally chooses which champion he wants to face, which brand he wants to sign with, which would be Raw, because I think Raw needs him a lot more than SmackDown does. So he could go after Roman, you know, the night after the Rumble this Monday, he could lay out Roman Reigns to end the show. He could go to SmackDown that same week or the following week. He could pop up on SmackDown and he can get face to face with John Cena and he could tease something with Cena. But he could tease something with AJ Styles, both of whom he has a history with. Came up in the business with John Cena at UPW. He worked with AJ Styles down in the, in the Florida territory, I guess they would say, because, you know, TNA poses such a threat to them. We can't utter those initials on TV, I guess. But, I mean, Joe has been waiting in the wings for so long. He is one of the few guys they have who has a believable, badass aura about him. Very few people in that company have it. Brock has it. Goldberg has it. Joe has that same thing about him. Joe may not be, you know, as big or tall or whatever, but he's got that same quality. So him winning the Royal Rumble is not something that I think people have to look at and be ashamed of or be disappointed in or feel underwhelmed about. I think he is the perfect choice to win the Royal Rumble. I think it's okay to have somebody come in there, a new face. And it's funny me calling him a new face because he's been wrestling for, 15 years now. He's been in WWE. He's been in NXT for a number of years already. He's not exactly a new face, but he's new to the main roster. And you want to make a big star on night one. For the people who don't think Samoa Joe's a big star already, you make a new star on night one by having him win the Royal Rumble. And by building anticipation about who he might go after at WrestleMania. Who is the person that he wants to go after and take the title away from? And then you've got Roman and Joe, which I actually think would be a pretty intriguing match. Now, hopefully he enters the Rumble at number 23, because that's my number in the Facebook pool. I am pulling for number 23, whoever that is. Raw from this past Monday was live from Cleveland, Ohio. The Twitter poll had over almost 2,300 votes, which is a lot. That's actually way above average for a normal Raw poll. It wasn't like the day after a pay-per-view or anything like that. 49% thumbs up, 51% thumbs down, nearly an even split, which is actually an improvement from what Raw has been doing over the last month and a half or so. And I would bet you that if you take out that ending with Goldberg, Brock, and Undertaker, that thumbs up percentage drops by at least 15 points. Mick Foley was back on the show this week. Stephanie was not there in person, in case you thought Foley might be able to escape unscathed this week. She made sure to call in on speakerphone and embarrass him. A speakerphone slap, you might say. He was about to tell Sami Zayn at one point that you could be in the Royal Rumble match, sure. Until Stephanie cut him off and said, no, Sami will have to wrestle Seth Rollins. And if he wins, then he could be in the Royal Rumble. And then Stephanie told Foley something that we couldn't hear off of speakerphone, which was about Seth Rollins having to wrestle Sami Zayn for a chance to qualify for the Rumble, which Foley did not want to do, but you do what Mother Hen tells you to do, and so he did. Rollins and Zayn actually had a hell of a match. I guess, or you would call it a haluva match. That was really bad. I apologize. It's too early in the morning to be doing humor like that. Rollins gave Sami a pedigree on the apron, which looked like it must have sucked to take. Rollins had the match won when Motorhead played and distracted Seth Rollins. Lemmy from the grave provides the distraction. No sign of Triple H, but when Seth turned around, Sami rolled him up and pinned him. So, in something of a shocker, Sami Zayn qualifies for the Royal Rumble, and Seth Rollins does not. But believe me, he'll be there. He'll be there, mark my words. He'll get his revenge, as I explained earlier in the Rumble predictions. They can get away with keeping Rollins out of the match, too, because they've already loaded up with a bunch of big names. So it's not like, man, how could they keep Seth Rollins out of the Royal Rumble? It's like, well, they're keeping him out to advance that storyline, and they don't need him in there because they've got Goldberg and Brock and Strowman and Undertaker and Ambrose and all these other people. So they can actually get away with him not being in the match, and it's not like he's going to win anyway. Mustafa Ali, I have to just mention him. I got to give him props. His inverted 450 is my new favorite move in all of wrestling. Just barely edges out the Red Arrow. I love that slow motion replay they showed of that move. There's only literally inches that he has if he doesn't rotate just enough where it could go very badly. And I'm always in awe when I see these guys pull these moves off. It's just incredible. I also like how this guy's entire gimmick is basically, hey, dumb Americans, I'm not going to blow up your house. Please like me. Right? That's the gimmick they've given this guy. That's basically what he's saying in that vignette. You hear my name, you look at my face, and I know what you're thinking. It's like, well, you know, some of us actually don't think that way. How sad is that, right? It's sadder, you know what, that he's not even wrong. There are probably plenty of people watching this show who actually feel that way, and to me, that's the saddest thing of all. Big Show made his first appearance on Raw in months. He looks to be in the best shape of his life. He had a stare down with Braun Strowman, I'm sure a preview of what we will see tomorrow night in the Rumble. They set up yet another match between Roman Reigns and Chris Jericho, a rematch for the United States Championship. I've lost track of how many matches they have had between Reigns, Jericho, and Owens. I did the whole rundown a few weeks ago. We've since added, I think, a couple of matches to that. The saving grace was Kevin Owens on commentary, just relentlessly roasting Byron Saxton. That was quite entertaining. Owens ran in for the DQ when it looked like Jericho was about to lose. He called for the shark cage to be lowered since it was above the ring. He tried to throw Roman inside, but Roman outsmarted them both, and it was Kevin Owens who ended up being locked inside. And as they started raising the cage, Jericho grabbed it. He was trying for dear life. He was hanging on, trying to pull it down. And as the cage went up, Jericho's feet came off the mat. He's still hanging on to the cage. And I have to give them a lot of credit for this. They did this fantastic spot, and on camera they just nailed it perfectly, where Jericho is hanging by one arm, just as Roman Reigns is flying through the air with a Superman punch. And he knocks Jericho off the cage. Like, Jericho lets go and he falls to the mat. They showed it on the slow-mo. It looked awesome. That was really cool. I have to give them credit for that. That was a really cool spot. And the only time on the show, really, that Roman got cheered was when he hit that Superman punch. See, when you have Roman Reigns do cool shit, people cheer. It's amazing how that works. Goldberg came out for a promo to end the show. Goldberg was so hyped up that he headbutted the locker room door before coming out for his promo. He split his head open. In the process, he started bleeding in the ring. The blood began to trickle down his forehead. Not only that, but he then proceeded to screw up his promo 3 different times and kept starting over because he just didn't know what to say. And finally, he settled down, and after that, everything was okay. Basically, it looked like the man concussed himself and couldn't remember his scripted lines. He had trouble saying Universal Championship. He kept getting stuck on that point and having to start over again. He could have just said that red thing and moved on. But there's an Eva Marie joke in there somewhere. The blood now is dripping down his forehead. If ever there was a time for a ref stoppage, the first like 60 seconds of this promo, this would have been it. Finally, they sent Paul Heyman out there to just save this whole thing. He brought out Brock Lesnar. They eventually came face to face in the ring when we heard the Undertaker's dong. When the lights came on, Undertaker was standing in the ring in his gear. He didn't have his hat on. He didn't have his coat. He was in his gear. He was looking kind of hunched over a little bit. He was standing very awkwardly. That was the first thing I noticed. And I'll be honest with you. I thought this was cool. I thought it was cool. Just the visual of Undertaker and Goldberg sharing a ring together for the first time. I don't believe that's ever happened before. So that was cool. But I couldn't help but just feel sad when this was over. Undertaker, his posture, like, I don't know. I know he had hip surgery recently. It was just a temporary stopgap, and he's going to need to have one or both of his hips replaced. Let me tell you something about The Undertaker. I've been reading about The Undertaker needing a hip replacement since 1998. That's when I first read in one of the newsletters that he was told by doctors that he would need a hip replacement. 1998! So I'm watching him here hunched, kind of a little hunched over like this. And I don't know if it's the hip or the back or what it was, but it just made me sad to see him like that. But you know, the crowd ate it up. It got the biggest reaction of anything on the entire show. He didn't have to do anything. All he had to do was stand there. I don't know. The fact that this got the biggest reaction and this was really the one, I think this was the reason that people even gave the show a thumbs up. There were some other good things on the show, but I really feel like had this not ended the show, I said that thumbs up, thumbs down percentage in our Twitter poll would have looked a lot more lopsided. People were into this. They liked it. They thought it was cool. And I don't know what that says about the rest of the roster, but, you know, look, it's that time of year. It's all hands on deck. You bust out your big guns. And I'll admit, look, a big part of why I'm excited about the Rumble tomorrow night is because they do have guys like Brock and The Undertaker and Goldberg in the match. Goldberg is the biggest babyface on Raw. I'm not hating. I'm just telling it to you like it is. But I do think that it doesn't speak very well to their ability to create new stars or create a big new star who can rival that type of popularity that those guys still have. They don't have it. They don't have anybody like that right now after Cena, like post Cena. They don't have anybody like that. I mean, why do you think they paid these guys so much money to come back on part-time deals and wrestle 2, 3, 4 times a year? They're not throwing money at these guys because they like them. Hey, this is your pension plan. Yeah, they sure as hell ain't going to do that. No, they're paying these guys because they see the value, because people get excited and they want to see the guys they remember as big stars from when they were younger and when wrestling was hot. And I don't blame them for bringing them in. But again, between the way The Undertaker was looking and the fact that this is what really got the biggest reaction on the show, it was eye-opening. SmackDown Live poll up on Twitter, 1,700 plus votes, 85% thumbs up, 15% thumbs down. People still drinking the SmackDown Kool-Aid. They still like what they're seeing every single week. I already talked about the Cena Styles promo. I liked it. Didn't have an issue with it aside from AJ just standing there and taking it and not going back and forth with Cena. And provided Styles wins at the Rumble, again, I'm okay with it. Randy Orton beat Luke Harper, then laid out by Bray Wyatt, poor Luke Harper. So they were building it up as Luke may have just been excommunicated from the family, or it could just be Bray's way of showing tough love. I didn't watch this as Luke Harper is now out of the Wyatt family. I saw it more like, all right, he's laying out one of his boys to teach him a lesson or something, or because he failed him, he lost the match. But Orton's plan to destroy the Wyatts from within, at least I see that as being the storyline. That should be the storyline. It's working like a charm. I'm telling you, he's like an undercover cop that goes deep undercover for months before they finally make the big bust. Mickie James cut her first promo since coming back and going heel. I thought it was pretty good. Pretty good stuff. Talked about how all these women talk about this women's revolution, and I find it insulting as though my accomplishments from back in the day don't mean anything. That was the basic gist of the promo, and she talked more about that on Talking Smack. It really bothers her that, you know, it's as though what women like myself and Trish did back in the day just never happened. And Becky came out to attack her. Alexa Bliss ran down. They ended up ganging up on Becky and left her laying. They did the stuff with Carmella and James Ellsworth. She took Ellsworth on a shopping spree at this one place, trying to buy him some new clothes. I also noticed the blinding spray tan that James Ellsworth had. I guess it's probably WWE protocol, right? You're on TV, you're in HD, unless you're a Sheamus or a Paige or somebody like that who just can't possibly be helped. There's just no way. There's no way, take it from me, there's no way, unfortunately, that you can get a tan. I found that out the hard way when I went to Cancun last year. And I thought I was well taken care of, right? I was out by the pool with my buddies, enjoying myself, and beautiful weather. Sun is shining. Sun, of course, is always stronger the closer you get to the equator. And I thought I was covered. Everything was covered. The face, the arms, everything. And I just, it didn't hit me until later that night that I forgot I have this thing called a back. You know that? Do you guys have one of those things called a back? Because I do. I found that out that night. Little kids ran from me the next day when I went. I actually ventured back out to the pool the next day, and people were almost terrified of me. People literally, there was one woman who came up to me and said, "Are you okay?" I was like, why wouldn't I be? Are you okay? Like, am I a kidnap victim or something? So anyway, I noticed it. Ellsworth definitely was wearing some bronzer here. And this segment was not as funny, I think, as they intended for it to be. Although, my favorite part of the whole segment was Carmella bashing Ellsworth in his fashion sense for being stuck in 1992. And God bless James Ellsworth. He stood up and said, 1992 was a great year. And I said, fuck yeah, it was. So any positive reference to 1992 gets a thumbs up from me. Mojo Rawley won a 10-man battle royal to qualify for the Royal Rumble match. These were, I mean, you can call it the Jobber Battle Royal. Some people might be offended by that. It was all the low mid-carders on the brand. It was Fandango and Tyler Breeze and Victor and Connor and Blitzen and Schnitzer and all these other people. So Mojo won, and so he'll be in the Royal Rumble. And I'm going to, you know, show some love for Mojo Rawley because I watch Talking Smack. I'm a big fan of Talking Smack. And he's been on the show a couple of times over the last few weeks, and they've really given him some mic time to talk about his background, talk about his life, talk about his new change in attitude now that Zack Ryder is on the injured list and how he's going to be more serious. And it let you into him, and it let you into his past in a way that they really have not done since he debuted in NXT. I've learned more about this guy in the last few weeks than I ever knew about him before. You know, again, before I knew that he was a football player and he was friends with Gronkowski and he was, you know, probably on something and always hyped up, and that's all I knew. But now I feel like I have a better sense of who the guy is, and listening to him talk, you know, it's hard not to like this guy. And, you know, Mojo, as far as in the ring, he's still learning. He's still very much new to the wrestling business. He hasn't been in it very long. He's not, you know, great or anything like that, but I, you know, do I think he can get to a point where he can be a big star? He's got the charisma for it. You know, the verbal stuff, the charisma, the energy. Yeah, I think he's got a chance. I think somebody like a Baron Corbin will get there a lot quicker than he will. And I'm not sure that Corbin's experience in wrestling really is that much greater than Mojo. In fact, they seem to kind of mirror each other in a lot of ways, right? These two ex-football players who I don't think have been in wrestling very long coming up at the same time. Corbin seems a hell of a lot more advanced at this stage to me than Mojo does, but I think he's got a shot. And I'm pulling for him. Hopefully it works out for him. Because he got a really raw deal, and you know, it happened also with Shane Thorne and Nick Miller, TM61. I think it was Thorne who hurt his knee. He just had knee surgery. He's going to be out 7 to 9 months. when you're in a tag team like that and your partner goes down for 6 months, 9 months, it sucks. It ruins things. I mean, that person feels bad enough about getting hurt and being on the shelf, but now they have the guilt of, oh man, I fucked it up for my tag team partner. And I'm sure there was some of that with Mojo and with Zach, but now he's trying to take that and turn it into a positive, and he may end up screwing over Zack Ryder if he gets over too much before Zack comes back. But that's what you got to do. You got to look out for number one. And when something like that happens, it affects both guys. Dean Ambrose and Miz had a lumberjack match for the Intercontinental title to end the show, and Ambrose got the win with Dirty Deeds. He retained the championship, and so I don't know if that puts the exclamation point on that feud or not. I guess we're not going to be getting a Ambrose Renee Young against Miz and Maurice mixed tag match. Maybe we will, but I don't know what you do. You know, Ambrose won the rematch, and it would seem like they might just move on from this feud now. I didn't watch 205 Live this week, but I did hear from people, and so I went back and I watched the Brian Kendrick thing. He wrestled a guy by the name of Trip Bradshaw, which I thought was a pretty clever, if not unsubtle, dig at JBL for taking his spill when he went to go save Jerry Lawler a few weeks ago, which remains one of the funniest things I've seen on TV in a long, long time. And I will never, ever skip or miss an opportunity to bring up the fact that JBL tripped and fell flat on his face. NXT, again, TakeOver is tonight. I will probably do a separate, maybe like an extra on YouTube reviewing the show. Nothing of any real note happened on NXT itself this week, so there really is nothing to talk about there. What there is to talk about, I have to mention this. You know, Lucha Underground is on hiatus right now. They had their mid-season finale a few weeks ago. I still have no idea when the show is coming back. But there was some big news on the Lucha Libre front this week, because Pentagon Jr., who, as you know, or Pentagon Dark, whatever, one of my favorite performers in any company right now, he is the heart and soul, to me, of Lucha Underground. Pentagon Jr. is no more. He has left AAA. He showed up at the Crash promotion show last weekend, which is booked by Conan. A lot of political things going on in the Mexican wrestling scene. It was actually Pentagon and two others who left AAA. They all left together. Daga, who I think we've seen on Lucha Underground before, he also left. I know Pentagon's brother Phoenix, who was also a big part of Lucha Underground, he had already left AAA a number of months ago. What this means for their future in Lucha Underground is unknown. Dorian Roldan, who runs AAA, just gained more power in Lucha Underground. This is according to a report in The Observer this week. He's been tapped to head up Lucha Underground's talent relations and their live events and their merchandising. And if they ever get around to actually putting out merchandise and doing house shows, they're claiming spring or summer. I think the executive producer went on a podcast a few weeks ago and said that we're looking at spring or summer to finally do live events. I'll believe it when I see it, because I've been hearing this for months now. But that would seem, you know, Roldan gaining power, I don't know the power structure and everything, but on the surface it would certainly seem to be a bad sign for their future there. Lucha Underground owns the name Pentagon Dark. AAA owns not only Pentagon Jr., but they own the Cero Miedo phrase, the no, you know, zero fear, which is what Pentagon was going to call himself. He was going to call himself Pentagon Cero Miedo, but now he can't, and so instead he's going by the name Pentagon L0M, like the number zero and the letter M, which I guess is an abbreviation for Cero Miedo. Not as good of a name, but he's trying to work around, I guess, all the trademark stuff. Pentagon is my favorite guy on Lucha Underground. He's probably the most popular character on the entire show. If he were to leave, that would be a big blow. Hopefully one thing does not affect the other, you know, him leaving AAA and he stays on the show. Pentagon, to me, is just the perfect fit for Lucha Underground. And even though I do watch more WWE than anything else other than Lucha Underground, and I am still a big fan of NXT, and the idea of him going to NXT is kind of intriguing to me, I just don't know that it would work. I mean, you know that if he ever went to NXT, the first thing they'd probably wanted to do is take his fucking mask off, right? That's what they do with these guys. And sometimes it works out fine, but I think that would be a disaster if they tried to do that with Pentagon. To that, I say no thank you. And he's, you know, more of an extreme guy. We've seen him in a lot of these hardcore type matches and these brawls. I don't know that he would be able to do any of that in WWE. So I think he needs to stay exactly where he is. There's still a lot of rumors about Lucha Underground possibly coming to Netflix. I hope it happens. Any positive deal that gets them potentially into more homes or gives people more easier access to the show, which I think Netflix would give them over El Rey. I still get the sense El Rey is just not in the number of homes that you would want El Rey to be in. So I hope it happens. Again, anything that will give them a real chance to grow. I think Netflix would be a huge deal for them. Let's get into your mailbag questions here. If you have them, you can always email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. We had quite the Canadian mailbag last week. Lots of questions from all of the Canucks up there. So we are going to try to get some more variety this week. This comes from a listener who shall remain nameless, only because I didn't ask him if he wanted to be named or not, so I won't name him. But he works for MMAweekly.com. He sends me stuff from time to time. He sent me this. I remember you talking about Yoshiko attacking Yasukawa a few years ago in the Stardom promotion. Well, Yoshiko returned to wrestling last year and is now set to make her MMA debut in February. The fact that Road FC, which is the name of the promotion, is using her attack on Yasukawa as a selling point for her fight is disappointing, but I guess you take whatever media attention you can get. And I heard this, and sure enough, he sent the press release to me. It says, Road Fighting Championship announces that notorious Japanese female professional wrestler Yoshiko will face Chun Sun Yu in her MMA debut on February 11th at the Jangchung Arena in Seoul, South Korea. Yoshiko started her pro wrestling career at only 17 years of age. She was awarded as a rookie for her outstanding performances as well as winning numerous championships. But when Yoshiko beat an opponent so badly that she needed surgery, which ultimately ended her career, Yoshiko's villain persona in the ring tragically became true to life. Now the notorious Yoshiko will turn her aggressive tendencies to MMA. You know what? I hope she gets her clock cleaned. I still think it's disgusting that she was able to wrestle again, that any promoter would even accept her in and would work with her, I think is ridiculous after what she did. MMA sounds more like it's up her alley. And I don't even blame them for doing this. You know, they want to bring her in as a freak show attraction, then go ahead. But it would be nice karma, I think, for her to have her face caved in. And I hope she does. Manj from England. I have a feeling Finn Balor will shock the world by returning to action and winning the Royal Rumble match. What do you think? It's possible. It's possible. He was in Birmingham on Thursday. I know he was in Alabama this week to try to get cleared. He may already be cleared. If he got cleared, I don't think they would tell us if they were going to save him as a surprise. So, yeah, I mean, him being a surprise in the Rumble would not shock me. Him winning would not shock me. I don't expect it. I'm still going with Samoa Joe to win the whole thing. Gus from Clarksburg, Maryland. I noticed Sami Zayn and others had to earn their way into the Royal Rumble this year, while guys like Rusev, The New Day, and the Wyatts just announced that they were going to be in the match. I know WWE has never given an explanation why some have to earn their way in and others do not. My question is, do you think it would be a good idea for everyone in the Rumble to earn their entry through qualifying matches throughout the year, starting at WrestleMania all the way through the final SmackDown before the Rumble? I think this would force WWE to keep the 30 participants strong during the year to give most of them a realistic shot of winning. It would also open up a possibility or multiple possibilities for intriguing storylines throughout the year. What do you think? I kind of like that. Yeah, not from WrestleMania, though. I wouldn't start that early. You know, start after SummerSlam. Right? I mean, that whole fall period is sort of like a dead period for them anyway during the year. You could have Raw spacing their 15 qualifiers out over a period of months, and you could have SmackDown do the same thing. The only issue is, you know, they always like to keep some spots open for surprises. So how do you determine exactly how many qualifying matches to do? Because believe me, they don't know months in advance who the surprise names are going to be or how many surprise entries they're going to have in the Rumble. I don't buy for a second that that's something, you know, 4, 5, 6 months in advance that they know. They don't. So maybe you do 12 and 12 and you leave 6 spots open or something like that. But I think it's a good idea. Although you'd have guys who qualify for the Rumble, let's say in September, like months in advance. So-and-so, Rusev is going to be in the Royal Rumble. And then they get in the Rumble and they end up being dumped out in like less than 30 seconds. It kind of seems like it might be a waste. But I do agree that it would make each spot in the Rumble that much more valuable. Graham from Connecticut, I was listening back to some of your old shows while out on internship last semester, and you said in late 2015 that AJ Styles was among the best wrestlers in the world, along with Okada and Tanahashi. Do you feel that after the year he's had in WWE that he is now not only among the best wrestlers in the world, but that he is the best wrestler in the world? Are Okada and Tanahashi still in that conversation, or has someone surpassed them all like a Kenny Omega? Hey, until Tanahashi retires, he'll always be in the conversation. Same goes for Okada. Okada, to me, is still one of the best. You know, people were talking about that match with him and Omega's getting all this praise, and it's like, hey, it takes two to tango here. You know, give Okada credit, too, because he was awesome in that match. If I had to pick one guy right now who I think is the best overall wrestler in the world, it would have to be AJ Styles. Yeah, I think he is. I think he's the best. Everywhere this guy goes, he tears it up. TNA, New Japan, Raw, SmackDown, it doesn't matter. The guy delivers all the time. The guy delivers more than the mailman does. Okay, he's fantastic. So to me, he is, as the total package, so to speak, he is the best wrestler in the world. And he has been for a while. This comes from Peter. If The Undertaker were to give Shawn Michaels his blessing to have one more match, do you think that he would be, do you think that would be good enough for Shawn to come back? No, I don't. I don't think he wants to. I don't think he wants to wrestle again. It was sort of like a pipe dream when I first pitched him coming back against AJ for the title at the Rumble when I pitched it back in September. And then there was that one or two websites that picked it up, and somehow this became like a big story that even AJ was asked about. And it was like, ugh. I pitched it as an idea. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden it became like, ooh, the rumor said. Like, no, it's just an idea. And I don't know that I honestly expected it to happen. But it would have been a hell of a match. You got to admit that. It would have been a hell of a match. But I wasn't really expecting it. Like, all of the possible opponents he could have come back against over the years. Daniel Bryan, AJ Styles, Samoa Joe. He talked about Samoa Joe being his own dream opponent. And still, he has shown no interest in coming back. He gives the same answer that Steve Austin gave. He just did an interview with ESPN. He was promoting his new movie. Do I think I could come back right now and have another run? Yes. That's exactly what Steve Austin used to say. But he doesn't because he doesn't want to. I think he likes being retired. I mean, what a concept, right? This guy beats the shit out of his body for 20 years, 25 years, and now he's retired and hanging out with his kids. Oh, I mean, what a horrible thing that is, right? I mean, come on. Maybe he just enjoys being retired. He likes being with his family. And here's the other thing I think people have to understand, and I've heard him talk about this before. Shawn Michaels, some would say, is the greatest of all time. If he's not the greatest of all time, he's in the conversation for top five. Just like in the ring, performance, you know, performance-wise, absolutely one of the best of all time. And with that comes certain expectations. If Shawn Michaels is going to come back and have a match at WrestleMania, then you damn well know that people are going to be expecting his match to be the best match on the entire show. Because traditionally, it always was. More often than not, Shawn would always go out there and have the best match on the card. And it didn't matter if it was the first half of his career or the second half. I kind of break his career up into two parts. It's like BC and AD. And would argue that the second half of his career was probably better than the first when it came to all the matches that he had. But it's got to be enormous pressure that he's under to go out there and deliver and have these kick-ass matches every single time out as he continues to get older. So I think Undertaker could go up to him and say, look, I've got no problem if you wanted to come back and do one more match. But I don't think he would want to do that to The Undertaker. I think even if Undertaker gave his blessing, it's a respect thing. I don't think he would want to do that to The Undertaker. And B, I just think I don't get the sense that fire is there. He had his time and now he's enjoying the fruits of his labor. And he can stay involved by working with guys down at the Performance Center. He just moved to Florida. He's going to be involved. He's going to be there. He could still make appearances. He could still come out and dance and do the pyro and get the big pop. He doesn't have to get in the ring and put that kind of pressure on himself to perform. You know, what they have him doing now, coming out and doing comedy with Rusev and Big Cass and Enzo, that's enough for him. David from Greenville, South Carolina. I was watching the 1992 Royal Rumble again. And yes, he says, it is the greatest of all time. Good man, David is. And I forgot how nasty of a bump Big Boss Man took when he was eliminated. It looked like his head got whiplashed on the bottom rope. Can you think of a worse-looking elimination in Royal Rumble history? Well, the first thing that comes to mind, it wasn't technically the Royal Rumble. It was promoting the Royal Rumble. They had that corporate Rumble that they did on Raw. It might have been the final Raw before the Rumble pay-per-view in 99. And China eliminated Vince McMahon to win the match. Vince was distracted by Steve Austin outside the ring. China came up from behind and just threw him out of the ring. And it was almost exactly the same thing that happened to the Boss Man. But this looked far worse. Honestly, I mean, how Vince didn't break his neck, I'll never know. His head got stuck under the bottom rope and it snapped back so hard. It was brutal. Brutal! And, you know, in the Rumble match itself, I think Boss Man is absolutely up there as one of the, you say one of the worst. I mean, one of the most, you know, like cringing, like brutal eliminations. I remember there were two more. If I had to name two more, the Snitsky clothesline on Paul London, Paul London was on the apron and Snitsky clotheslined him inside out. And London took this great bump to the floor and landed flat on his face. That was a nasty bump. It looked cool. It looked cool. He pulled it off, but it looked nasty as hell. And I also think of Taka Michinoku from the Rumble in 2000 at MSG. I think it was Bradshaw of the APA at the time was in there. And they were doing the comedy stuff with Kai and Tai. I think they came out like two or three different times. They might have been in the Rumble and then were eliminated, but they came back out like two or three times to interfere. And they played it up for comedy. And I think the last time... Actually, it might have been the second to last time. Kai and Tai, I think, came out one more time, but Taka wasn't with them. Because I think it was JBL who threw Taka out of the ring. And he took... I think he might have, like, flipped, like, did a complete rotation or something. And he landed flat on his face. He hit the floor hard. He hit the floor hard. So I think he got hurt. I don't know if he got concussed or what happened. But that looked really nasty. And clearly he got hurt because I think Kai and Tai did come out one more time. And he didn't come out with them that time. So that was pretty nasty. David has one other question. When it comes to the King of the Ring, why is it never connected to the Rumble? Post Steve Austin winning it, the King of the Ring was more of a death knell for a superstar. Instead, why not make the winner automatically get a shot at whichever brand's champion at the Royal Rumble? Much like the Money in the Bank briefcase, this would then elevate the status of being King of the Ring and make the tournament more meaningful. Well, I mean, I wouldn't connect it to the Rumble. I mean, King of the Ring was always a summer pay-per-view, right? Rumble's in January. There's no need to bunch up all these things that close to the beginning of the year. I liked it the way they did it in 94 and 95, where the winner earned a WWE Championship match at SummerSlam. Owen Hart won, he got the title shot against Bret. Mabel won, he got the title shot against Diesel. I wish he hadn't, but he did. Now you've got two titles. So with two titles, it's like, when I did my predictions a few weeks ago, I predicted that Baron Corbin is going to win the Money in the Bank contract this year. But if the King of the Ring were still around, why not pick somebody like Corbin to win and then give him a WWE title shot at SummerSlam? Like, if Corbin against Cena or Corbin against Styles is not the big, like, marquee match that you look for to headline WrestleMania, well, then you put the Universal title match on last. You got two titles. So you can afford to take a chance on somebody who, if you only had one belt, you might not take a chance on. That's the one thing about having two titles that actually is a positive, and I wish they didn't have two belts, but the positive is that you can do stuff like that. So Rumble and Mania don't need any help to feel special. I mean, they're the two biggest shows all year long. You don't have to do anything to make the Rumble feel any more special than it already is. You know, why not make SummerSlam special by connecting it to the King of the Ring, not the Royal Rumble? I would go ahead and kind of do it the way they used to back in the day. Malik from Manchester, England. Do you think people like Bo Dallas and Tyler Breeze are happy in their positions, or do you think they had bigger aspirations, both being former champions in NXT? Is it through any fault of their own that they've become comedy props who are rarely seen on TV, and when they are on TV, they always lose? Well, I mean, you'd have to ask them that question. Some guys are happy just to collect the paycheck and just be a star on TV, even if they're not on TV every week. Kenny Omega did that interview I mentioned earlier. He did an interview before Wrestle Kingdom. And he basically said in the interview, like, I don't ever want to be like that. I don't want to be someone who just settles, who just takes the money just to say I'm a WWE superstar. He was really going all in on those guys for doing that. And look, you know, some guys are fine with that. I think Bo Dallas and Tyler Breeze, I know they were big fans growing up. At least Tyler Breeze was. And this is what they love. You know, this is what they always wanted to do. Of course they had bigger aspirations than being stuck in a comedy gimmick. I don't know that anybody dreams of being a pro wrestler and being a big star and a champion one day and thinking, man, I can't wait to be doing comedy segments at the beginning of Raw, you know, or jobbing out to everybody every single week. Nobody dreams about that, but everybody has a role to fill on the show, and some guys have to fill that role. And, that's the role that they happen to be in right now. And look, I mean, they may enjoy it. But you can't tell me that they didn't one day dream of being a world champion or headlining a WrestleMania. Of course they did. Everybody does. But not everybody can be a world champion. Not everybody can headline WrestleMania. I never saw the Tyler Breeze character. And you guys know I was a big, big, big Tyler Breeze fan when he first came on the scene in NXT, right up to the point that he got called up to the main roster. And it's not like I'm not a fan of his now. But I was a huge proponent for him. And there were people who didn't see it. They're like, I don't know what you see in this guy. I'm like, well, just watch him work. Watch his matches. Like, if the gimmick doesn't do anything for you, just watch him in the ring. Like, the guy's got it. You know what I mean? And I was always a big fan of his. But even then, I said, I didn't see the Tyler Breeze character as he was portraying it at the time as a headline act. But I sure as hell saw him as more than what they have him doing now. His work down in NXT was fantastic. He could have been a solid middle of the card, upper middle card guy, and then over time, who knows if he might have been able to evolve that character into something more serious. But they hardly gave the guy a chance. He had the feud with Dolph Ziggler, it lasted all of a month, and then poof, that was it. You know, there's a role for everyone on the show. Raw needs some utility players, SmackDown needs some utility players. If those guys are comfortable being utility players for the rest of their careers and making, let's say, low six figures, I'm just spitballing here, then good for them. I wish I was making low six figures. You know what I mean? If that were me, I might just take the money and do the same thing. If they're making good money, supporting their family, hopefully they're still having fun. But if they're not happy or they're too afraid to speak up or pitch ideas, you know, that keep falling on deaf ears, like they're pitching ideas and they keep getting turned down, like Cody Rhodes. Cody Rhodes was doing that. Cody finally said, enough, I'm done. Wade Barrett finally said, enough, I'm done. I respect that. It takes guts to do that. It takes guts to say, I'm going to leave behind a sure thing. I'm going to leave behind guaranteed money and take a chance on myself, which is what those guys did. But, you know, it's a tough thing for a guy like Tyler Breeze. He spent, what, 5 years, I think he spent, in developmental? All that time that he invested before finally he landed on a winner with that gimmick. 5 years in developmental before he finally caught his big break. Gets to the main roster. And less than, what, 18 months later, he's doing the tag team thing with Fandango. And look, it's entertaining enough, the whole Fashion Police thing. There's nothing wrong with it. But if it's not the sort of thing that, let's say, he envisioned himself doing, I can see where it would be hard to make waves or to quit and go somewhere else when you've invested so much time, so many years in this company just to get to this point. Only just to say, I'm going to give it all up. It's a mindfuck is what it is. It's got to be a total mindfuck for some of these guys. Katie from Minneapolis, who is really unhappy that WWE is bringing WrestleMania back to New Orleans next year and not to the Twin Cities. To her, I say patience. I have a feeling that they're going to be coming there for 35 or 36. The whole Minneapolis thing has been mentioned for so long. You have to think at some point in the near future they're going to Minneapolis. They have the new stadium there, so just patience. She says, you've mentioned before on the show that both Peter Rosenberg and Sam Roberts have worked with WWE in different capacities, from playing the voice of the WWE universe on pay-per-view pre-shows to the infuriating Bring It to the Table on the WWE Network. With more and more occurrences of this type of outreach, it got me thinking, if you were ever approached to work with WWE in a similar fashion, would you do it? If so, what would your stipulations be? I don't really think I'm in a position to be making any sort of stipulations. well, they're not going to ask me, so it doesn't matter. I think their outreach is really to people. Yes, they may have a podcast, but they also work for a major media outlet of some kind, or they're a member of the media in some way, or they have experience doing television, right? That would be my guess. If they ever did reach out, we'll see. I mean, look, 2016 was a pretty strange year in pro wrestling. We saw a lot of things last year that we never thought we would see. So the idea that they would start reaching out to random podcasters to do stuff on the network, it's not as far-fetched as it would have been a year ago to think. You never know. You never know. Matthew from Westport, Massachusetts. I have a question I've been meaning to ask for months now, but never got around to it. In WWE, there have been many feuds that have been praised for the bad blood that has been spilt in the ring, all in the name of storytelling. In my opinion, the feud between Triple H and Shawn Michaels from 02 to 04 is my favorite, and I believe it to be the most overlooked. From the unsanctioned street fight to the Elimination Chamber, to the Last Man Standing match, Hell in a Cell match, Three Stages of Hell, and even taking part in one of the greatest main events in WrestleMania history. It is not played up to be as great as it was. Do you look at this feud as one of the most underrated in WWE history? Why or why not? Yeah, I think you could say that it's somewhat underrated. I wouldn't call it my favorite, but when you put it like that, you think of all the matches they had and how long it dragged out for. I think that it will go down as one of the better, kind of longer storylines that they put together over the years. But the thing that always irritated me about the whole Shawn Michaels Triple H thing, and this was right when Shawn came back, they built it up like it was 10 years. In fact, I think they used that number, 10 years in the making. And I'm thinking to myself, bullshit. You know, like, where do they get these numbers from? They just pull them out of their ass. Again, a minor thing, but when they exaggerate stuff like that, it just pisses me off. Because they make it out to be bigger than it was when, if you just promote it on its own for what it is, it's big enough. You don't have to lie about it. You know what I mean? But yeah, they had a lot of wars. I mean, when Shawn came back, they had that unsanctioned match, which was great. People didn't know what to expect. Shawn's first match in many years. I wasn't a huge fan of all of the matches that you mentioned. I do think that, like, the ending of the Elimination Chamber, Shawn winning the championship, the big pyro celebration in Madison Square Garden, that was memorable. I really wasn't a big fan of that Three Stages of Hell match. I thought it was like, eh. I mean, Shawn took that ridiculous bump at the end off the ladder, but that I wasn't really a big fan of that. I was not a big fan of their Hell in a Cell match either. I'm not saying it was bad, but if I made a list of my top five favorite or what I think are the five best Hell in a Cell matches, it would not be in the top five. It went something like 47 minutes. It's like, just because the match is long doesn't mean it's going to be a great match. But then I think they had a very basic regular singles match for the championship on Raw at the end of 03. No stipulations, no Hell in a Cell, no nothing, just a match. And it was awesome. It was one of the best matches in Raw history. That was the one where they did the dusty finish where Shawn won the title, but then Bischoff said, no, no, your shoulders were down. And so in a draw, the champion retains the title. And it was clever the way they did it. It got a shit ton of heat on Bischoff, but that was a great match. So I remember that. And the Last Man Standing match they had at the Rumble where I think they both did, you know, the double juice. I mean, they had a lot of wars. And then you think of WrestleMania 20 where it was, you know, Shawn and Triple H and Steven Richards for the World Heavyweight title. That was a memorable match as well. So, yeah, I would say that to some extent it is kind of underrated because I don't hear about it a lot. They had some classic matches, but I would not lump them all together as though every match they had was just this all-time classic because some of them just didn't do anything for me. John from Cincinnati. Buy or sell on the bigger what if, Bruiser Brody or Art Barr? That's a good one. I saw this one. I'm like, I got to put this one in the mailbag. just going off of what I know about them, look, I'm not going to sit here and claim that I'm some big expert on Bruiser Brody's career or Art Barr's career. I know who they are. I've seen their matches. I've seen documentaries and people talk about them and what might have been and all that kind of stuff. I know Brody had a rep for being difficult for promoters to work with, and sometimes other wrestlers. You could just ask Lex Luger about that. And the biggest what if question with Brody, I think, would be what if he had gone to work for Vince and had a program with Hogan? Because there were definitely rumors about it, and it never came to be. And Brody was a big star all over the world in multiple countries and multiple promotions, but he never went to WWE for a run. I mean, it's possible he might have worked like a Madison Square Garden show for Vince's father, like a one-off. But in terms of having a run or a program on TV with WWE, he never got that. And so that's the biggest what-if with him. You know, would Brody have been a big draw in WWE like he was everywhere else? Would he have put Hogan over? Would they have allowed him to be Bruiser Brody, or would they have watered him down? Right? Would he have punched Vince McMahon in the face and walked out? Which probably would not have surprised people, knowing the kind of guy that he could sometimes be. So the Berserker was a total ripoff of the Brody gimmick. But Brody was a mentor to him, you know, John Nord. And Nord has claimed in interviews that Brody was having discussions with WWE at the time about both of them coming in as a tag team. Now, is that true? I don't know. That's what he claims. Because when I did my whole rant on Brody's death a few years ago in the Sound Off, I read a lot about Bruiser Brody and you know, some of the interviews that John Nord has done were some of the stuff that I read. And so I didn't know this up until a couple of years ago. But again, is that true? I don't know. You'd have to ask. We'll never know, I guess, because Brody's not around. But that would have been interesting, I think, given all of the teams that WWE had there at the time. Demolition and all those guys. Brody in WWE is intriguing to think about. You know, could he have still been the crazy brawler, or would he have been what happened to the Bushwhackers, right? I mean, look what they did to the Sheepherders. It wasn't until I was older that I realized the Bushwhackers were actually a fucking scary team before they became what they became in WWE. And what they became is what they ended up being known for the rest of their career. So I don't think they regret that run. But they were definitely not what they had been before they came over. And I never knew. I'm watching matches now of these guys, and they're scary as all hell. Would Brody have allowed that to happen to him? Now, with Art Barr, I know the guy was really talented. I know he and Eddie Guerrero were a great tag team. I've seen the When Worlds Collide match that basically got Eddie a job in ECW, got him noticed by Paul Heyman. Art, I'm sure, would have gone with him had he not died. But I also know that he didn't spend much time in WCW before they found out that he was once accused of rape. I don't think he was ever charged with rape. I think he pled down to a lesser charge, but whatever happened, he admitted that it wasn't consensual, which is rape. I mean, rape is rape. And when WCW found out about it, he was gone. I really cannot see WCW taking him back after that, or WWE signing him. So how big he could have really gotten, we'll never know, but I don't think he ever would have gotten that chance. I think that thing would have followed him probably for the rest of his career, and I don't know that any of the big, big companies in this country would have ended up taking a chance on him. Bigger what if to me, I'm going to buy on Brody and I'm going to sell on Art Barr. I think Brody to me is the more intriguing what if. All right, this week in Sound Off History, episode 80, of course, I'm recording 480, so we go all the way back to episode 80, Sunday, August 30th, 2009. Talked about the wellness suspension of then Intercontinental Champion Rey Mysterio. He claimed that he was taking some kind of pain medication, and WWE officials handled the whole situation very poorly, he thought. They didn't give him enough time to provide a prescription for said medication. This is not the final time that we will have heard stories, similar types of stories. Rey was one of many cases like that. Episode 180 from September 26, 2011, talked about WWE changing its pay-per-view model and posed the question, is SmackDown dying right before our eyes? What can be done to stop the bleeding? Oh, what a difference 6 years can make. I could ask that same question now about Raw. think SmackDown's doing just fine. Episode 280 from June 23rd, 2013, talked about the greatest promo of Mark Henry's life. That was the one with the salmon jacket. That was 4 years ago. Also, we talked about Daniel Bryan's backstage confrontation with Triple H. And Paula Deen gets canned for using racist language. See, now if Hogan comes back at WrestleMania like I think he will, maybe he can bring Paula Deen with him. She could be his new manager. And finally, Sound Off 380 from April 26, 2015, talked about the end of the curb stomp and why I thought this banning of moves is setting a dangerous precedent, which I still feel that way. I also gave my thoughts on the Marine Four, the most ridiculous question I've ever been asked on a WWE survey. I don't even remember what it is. I'm now kind of curious to go back and find out what it is. Also that week, I quit halfway on Raw through, halfway through the show, I should say. So, I remember. I remember Raw was so infuriating and so, or just bad that midway through the show, I just said, I'm done. And what I did was I turned it off in favor of putting on an old episode on the network of Saturday Night's Main Event from like 1990. And I had way more fun watching Saturday Night's Main Event from 1990 than I did Monday Night Raw. And finally, on Sound of 380, I asked the question, if Vince McMahon is Walt Disney, because I believe somebody wrote in and said, you know, could Vince McMahon be looked, if he was looked at as Walt Disney, would that make Hulk Hogan his Mickey Mouse? So, that's what you have to go back and listen to on episode 380. If you want to hear any of these shows, most of them can be found in the archives on thesolemonster.com. I think from about episode 85 onward, everything should be up there all day, every day. If you want to check out some classic sound offs. I want to give one last shout out to Mike, longtime listener of the show. His friend passed away suddenly this past week, only 22 years old. And his family is trying to give him a proper burial. They have set up a GoFundMe to help pay for those expenses. So if you can spare anything at all, want to help out a member of the Sound Off family, just go to GoFundMe.com and in the search bar, type in the name Patrick Honig. That's H-O-N-I-G. And it'll be the first campaign that comes up. So I wanted to mention that here and say that I'm very sorry to hear that. There is still time left to get in on the Royal Rumble pool if you are listening to this on Saturday or Sunday. Just go to the Facebook group. If you are not in it, you have to apply for membership. Drop me a message so I know you're not a bot. You are a human being, and I will let you in. You will see Zach Hulker's post pinned to the top of the page. Most likely. If I unpin it to put this show up, just search for it. Just type in Zach Hulker. Find one of the Rumble posts. I don't even know. There's so much activity going on. Just make sure you don't just like the post. Post a comment. Tag Zach in it. And let him know that you want to be in the Rumble pool and he'll get you in there. Just be aware that if you wait too long and even if you get a number, if you end up in a pool that does not get 30 people in it, that pool ain't going to work. And so you won't be part of the contest. So you'll want to get in on that. Again, we're picking first, second, and third place winners from the final pool that I will be doing live on the show next Sunday. So everybody on Facebook in the next couple of days will find out if you won your individual pool. There's going to be a whole bunch of winners. But from that, I will take those 75 names or 80 names, however many names it is. It's basically me like putting them in a hat, so to speak. And we will pick a random winner, three random winners, in fact, first, second, and third place on the podcast next weekend. So that's how that's going to work. And then we'll divvy out the prizes accordingly. Again, the first place winner gets $100. American cash. $100 from Alvin Seegerts. He'll PayPal you that money. Plus, you also get the free Sound Off shirt from our store. Shout out on the podcast. All the winners from that final pool will get shout outs. It's a lot of fun. Thank you to everybody who has signed up. We've got, again, close to, if not 2,300 of you. We had 690 last year, and that was incredible. We have 2,300 this year, and it's just been overwhelming. The Royal Rumble is tomorrow night. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. I will be live tweeting during the pay-per-view. I'm going to try my hardest to get a Sound Off Extra review up on YouTube later that night, if not the next morning. I make no promises because it's just with my work schedule and everything. It's going to be tough, but that is the current plan. I'm also probably going to do a Sound Off Extra review for the NXT TakeOver show tonight, maybe get that up sometime tomorrow. So there's going to probably be a lot of bonus audio coming your way this weekend. It's like multiple sound offs. So this would be a good time to subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you have not already done so, my name on there is The Solemn Monster, all one word. That's my username. That's the official channel. So that's the one to subscribe to. But definitely follow along on social media, Twitter and Facebook, and any sort of updates, I will be sure to give it to you there. We will be back next weekend with episode 481. Until then, be well, stay safe, remember the Rumble. Such a ridiculous catchphrase. I'm going to enjoy the Rumble, though. I'm actually looking forward to the Rumble match a lot, and I've got high hopes for it. Hopefully, I'm not setting myself up to be disappointed, but I am pulling for Samoa Joe, or whoever comes out at number 23. That's who I want to win the Royal Rumble. Till next weekend, I'll see you guys then. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemn Monster sounds off.
This Impact show has moved so many times. It's got more fucking moves than Bruno Mars, this show does. Don't believe me, just watch. Impact started out on Friday, then moved to Saturday, Thursday, then they moved it to Monday. They got slaughtered, so they moved it back to Thursday, then they moved it to Wednesday, Friday again, then back to Wednesday, Tuesday, and now back to Thursday. It's like the Big Show of TV shows. It's turned 1,000 times already, and the only time people pay any attention to it is when it makes them laugh.
Monster sounds off. Since 2007, The Solemn Monster sounds off. Available at thesolemnmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemn Monster sound off.